AEMO On Air, the podcast about all things energy. Brought to you by the Australian Energy Market Operator. Hello, and welcome to AEMO On Air. My name's Paul Zanaro, and today we're joined by Claire Cass, who is the GM at AEMO responsible for network projects. Claire, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Paul.
And Claire, you've only been with AEMO for a relatively short period. How long have you been with the company?
3 months and counting, yeah.
It's been, I'm sure, a very busy 3 months based on what we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like I've been here a lot longer than 3 months. We've achieved a lot and there's still a lot more to achieve.
Yeah, it's a very busy space. You know, as we go through the energy transition and we build all that important infrastructure, basically to make sure that we have, you know, reliable electricity for homes and businesses, there's so much going on in that space. Now, you're an electrical engineer by trade.
I am.
So you've got a really interesting sort of work history, including working at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are quite a few parallels with AEMO. At the time, it was quite some time ago now, like I think it was around 12 years ago, but at that time, the Bureau was undergoing a huge change in terms of digital transformation, but also received quite a bit of funding for infrastructure upgrades, particularly radars. And while radars have definitely positively received in communities, there are a lot of challenges that go along with the implementation of those projects. So, you know, several parallels there. And then, of course, the Bureau's role in climate change and predicting changes to our climate in the future. And I guess here at AEMO, we're trying to mitigate the impacts of climate change. So, yeah, some interesting parallels there.
But also the weather, given so much of our generation now is weather dependent, getting good data on the weather is just so important for a stable energy system.
Yep, you're exactly right. So there's another parallel. So AEMO have a contract with the Bureau of Meteorology and the Bureau provides weather information to AEMO so that AEMO can forecast generation and demand. And so that sort of data feeds into our operational systems and also our ISP, our integrated system plan.
Yeah, of course. And you also spend some time in distribution networks. And of course, so much of the energy transition is dependent upon that part of the system.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was at PowerCorp for 4 years. And of course, PowerCorp does have generation, connected generation, and not all generation is connected via transmission. And it's all part of the puzzle in terms of balancing supply and demand and also reducing our carbon footprint by ensuring that renewable sources of electricity are integrated.
Now, something you work on every day, obviously, is the two major transmission projects happening across Victoria and New South Wales, two of the major transmission projects. You're heavily involved in VNI West, particularly the Victorian side of the Murray, and also the Western Renewables Link. So tell us a little bit about those two projects, but I suppose fundamentally one of the questions we get a lot is why do we need to build this transmission? What role will it play?
That's a really good point. So we do have clear targets that are set both at a national level and a state level in terms of our net zero targets, and that requires an investment in renewable energy. And renewable energy can only be connected if there is a reasonable amount of capacity on our transmission networks. And so that does require new transmission lines. Our existing networks just aren't capable of connecting the amount of generation that we're going to need in order to reach our targets. Western Renewables Link and VNI West have been were proposed as part of our integrated system plan quite some years ago. Western Renewables Link is being delivered by our delivery partner AusNet, and VNI West, we are undertaking the early work. So AEMO's created a subsidiary transmission company, Victoria, and we are undertaking the early works right now for VNI West.
And one of the things Daniel Westerman, our CEO, has said publicly is we used to generate electricity next to coal pits, but increasingly we're going to be generating electricity where we used to grow oranges, which is a really nice way, I think, a nice, neat little analogy to say that, you know, sun, because of course you grow oranges where it's very sunny, the big role that sun and wind is going to play in our generation. So the transmission projects that are being delivered, what role do they play in that shift?
First of all, we can still grow oranges. So that's really important to note that a lot of these renewable energy projects can operate side by side with agriculture and existing agriculture. But there are certain sources of generation that are better placed in certain areas of Victoria. So there are certain areas that have got excellent sunshine, so great solar yield, and there are places in Victoria that have excellent wind capability, so great for wind farms. Now, unfortunately, all of those places aren't necessarily based where our transmission's located. Our transmission has traditionally come to and from our coal-fired power stations, say, out in the Latrobe Valley. So in order to make the most of the existing renewable sources, we need to build new assets in those areas where transmission might not actually exist at this point in time. And that's why we need to build new transmission lines in order to connect new, where they're called distributed sources of electricity. And that means they can be dotted around Victoria. And it is a challenge to be able to connect them all into our existing grid.
And we're talking there about the northwest of Victoria, aren't we? Up through the Mallee and up towards the Murray there.
Yeah, that's right. We have something called renewable energy zones that have highlighted particular areas of great solar yield or wind yield. And those areas are being worked through in terms of land use. So how is it that we can incorporate new wind farms, say, but still allow for the agriculture to continue? And then the new routes of transmission lines has been mindful of those areas of great renewable sources of electricity.
And one of the questions that we often hear is, why can't we just use existing transmission? I think you hinted at it before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the existing transmission lines play a role and they're still required. They just may not have the capability to carry the new amount of renewable energy, and that might be capacity, so the amount of renewable energy that can be connected, but also there's the stability of the system, which must be considered as well. And stability just allows us to operate and keep the lights on without causing adverse impacts to those of us that are existing, are connected to the network today.
So the transmission lines, for many of us who've driven out towards Gippsland, towards Latrobe Valley, there's a lot of existing transmission, but what you're saying is we'll need that and the new transmission.
Yeah, I mean, all of the existing coal-fired power stations are already considering how they can repurpose their land for renewable energy. So those transmission lines will still be needed. There's also offshore wind that will be coming into those areas. So there's absolutely no need to retire lines and build new ones. It's just that we need to build new ones in order to connect new sources of renewable energy.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of media coverage. You know, we are hearing people out there in the communities are opposed to some transmission. Can you expand a little bit on the conversations that you've had in those communities and what people are saying?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we really understand that it's quite impactful, the new transmission lines. There's considerations about farming operations, and there is no intent to disrupt the way land is currently used. What we'd really like to do is understand individual landholders, what considerations they need to be able to host new infrastructure. And that's sort of that's a holistic, I guess, conversation. A common conversation that we have is with landholders that are farmers that need to understand, well, how is it that they can continue operations? What do we need to know in order to make tweaks and changes to our route and the options identified so that we can allow for minimal impact to operations and particularly minimal impact to the environment and our cultural heritage. We're also having conversations about how TCV, that's Transmission Company Victoria, how we engage with landholders and communities. It's really important to have conversations that are meaningful and respectful and also that allow us to really consider what alternatives we have in designing our transmission infrastructure. We don't have all the answers, and the only way we can truly understand how to minimise impact is to have those conversations and to look at alternative options to make sure that we come up with the best solution.
And obviously this is something that would have happened in the 1950s when transmission was being built, you know, through the Latrobe Valley. And we see there's a lot of, you know, very productive farmland in Gippsland, which coexists with transmission. But this is something relatively new to current generations, though, isn't it? We haven't done a lot of this recently.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly those communities in northwest Victoria that haven't seen new transmission lines for even longer than 50 years. And the transmission lines may not be at the scale that we're looking at today. So, you know, it's a big change and it can be really scary. So change is always scary if you can't sort of feel it and see it and visualise how it could look and how it could alter operations. So that's one thing that we're really mindful of is to provide as much information as we can and provide the information early. Particularly right now, we haven't got all the decisions and we haven't landed on preferred options or made any hard and fast decisions. So it's a conversation that we are really keen to have with landholders and communities, is to bring them along the journey and have them influence how it is that we make those decisions.
Claire, the final route for V&I West has not been chosen, but can you maybe explain a little bit to us about how we narrow it down?
Yeah, sure. What we have identified is a 2-kilometre area of interest, and that gives us a broad area in which we can actually do studies and investigations to look at the best route within that 2-kilometre area of interest. And the environmental effects statement process helps with that. So a technical reference group is stood up, and that technical reference group includes members from various parties and includes members of the communities and landholders. And they help us. They help steer us into a area of around 100 kilometres, which is absolutely least impactful. So least impactful on environment, least impactful on individuals and communities, and least impactful on cultural heritage. And a lot of that involves survey. So surveying land, and that means we need to get access to land, and we're actually working through right this minute with landholders to gain agreed access to land. And access to land, that doesn't mean anything other than it helps us gather as much data as possible so we can make the right decisions. And data is just so important all within that 2-kilometre area of interest.
All right, we might take a short break. I'll be back. Claire, last year, The Economist magazine created a fair bit of sort of social media buzz when it ran a front cover of the magazine that said, "Hug pylons, not trees."
Yeah.
Did you see that? And as someone that delivers transmission for a living, you know, how did you take that?
Yeah, I did see that. I kind of get why it's controversial, but the fact is our coal-fired power stations are retiring, and therefore we need to embrace this transition, and renewable energy is a big part of it, and so is transmission. So I guess that's the point of the article, is that we've got to embrace this transition.
And yeah, this is not something that's just happening in Australia, right? I mean, you know, for those of us who are in the energy industry and we do read a lot of the international publications, we see exactly the same issues in the US, in Europe, in Asia.
Mm.
It is really a global thing, isn't it?
It is, and all nations developed nations are embracing the transition, and so it is. And all nations have faced similar challenges, and we are taking learnings from overseas in our own transition journey here in Australia.
And the transmission lines that we're talking about, say for example, V&I West, they're not just transmission lines that connect customers to new generation, but they're also transmission lines that go across state boundaries, right? So the interconnectors. What's the importance of the interconnector?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't mention that that one of the benefits of the likes of V&I West that connects into Western Renewable Link, that connects into our existing network, is to improve energy security. So that means we have additional redundancy with other states, but it also allows that sharing of renewable generation when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing in New South Wales, that we can benefit from it, or they can benefit from our additional generation here in Victoria and vice versa. So it just improves, I guess, that grid interconnectivity that we have today, but it makes it stronger.
And a lot of the new transmission that we're seeing connects renewable energy zones, but also unlocks the huge potential of things like Snowy Hydro, Hydro Tas, in the case of Marinus Link,
which is
another interconnector project. Clearly, that's something that will contribute hugely to keeping the lights on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it adds redundancy into the network, but it also allows us to match supply and demand at a huge, much greater scale. So all of these interconnectors, you know, they're vastly important. And while, yes, that they do require investment, it's an investment in, I guess, our future and our future to be able to live in the way that we are accustomed.
Yeah, which is homes and businesses having reliable and affordable energy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, one of the other areas, Claire, that we've heard a lot about is how do the communities that'll host infrastructure, what are the ways in which they could benefit from this new build?
Yeah, look, that's a really, really important point. Whilst the benefits of these new transmission lines are for all Victorians, what we're really trying to do, particularly for VNI West, is to ensure that the benefits of communities, those communities that are impacted or hosting infrastructure and landholders, are front of mind. So there are various things we're looking at. We are developing our social value strategy and our community benefits framework. And part of developing that collateral is to actually work with communities to understand what are their needs and what are the project needs, and trying to combine the two. So make sure that any decisions we make on the project, we are working with communities on how it is that we can maximise benefits for those communities. And so an example is when we tender for a delivery partner for VNI West, we'd like communities and traditional owner groups to actually be part of that process. So influencing our evaluation criteria and understanding what services communities and traditional owners can provide so that that delivery partner can use those services. And it's really important that we start those conversations now while we're developing our tender strategy so that we don't miss any opportunities.
Yeah. Now, Claire, this afternoon you're heading north to Warracknabeal, which is a beautiful part of Victoria.
It is.
What's happening in Warracknabeal?
There's a workshop that's been arranged by the Energy Charter with a whole lot of energy developers. So we are a developer of transmission, and there will be other developers for energy storage and wind and solar. And the intent of the workshop is actually to meet and discuss our various developments and ensure that we are coordinated in our areas of interest and coordinated in our engagement with communities. And I guess the best outcome would be that we are maximising community benefits by ensuring our developments nicely fit with each other without impacting communities, and if even better, to ensure that landholders are duly compensated.
Yeah. Well, good luck with your trip up to Warracknabeal. I'm sure it sounds like a really interesting engagement with the industry, and all the best with VNI West. And I'm sure we'll get you back on the podcast as the project progresses.
Would love to.
Thank you so much to Claire Cass, who was our guest today on the AEMO podcast. And thank you for everyone for listening. Have a lovely day.